From a security standpoint and technology sovereignty standpoint, in critical areas, you want to ensure that you're not suddenly cut off from critical technologies and so on and so forth. Being at the frontier versus frontier minus one or close to frontier minus delta is not as life or death as it's made out to be. I think India must be the R&D capital, R&D partner for the world. We'll be an inviting place for GCC because that itself is a direct export market. And fundamentally, we have to think of creating an environment where researchers and innovators thrive. I think just like you saw the rise of Japan and you saw the rise of China and, as a whole, the Asian tigers and others, right? You will see the rise of India as a research and innovation powerhouse.
AI and the shifting geopolitics has brought the talk about innovation and what it means for national and economic competitiveness for a country. And the fact is that the research breakthroughs don't happen overnight. They happen because of institutions. They happen because of ecosystems, entrepreneurship, talent, and patient capital, very long-term oriented capital. But India, if you look at it, we are not short on talent. We have researchers, world-class researchers. To a case in point is chip industry has 20% of the chip designers coming out of India. But at the same time, we don't have that many world-beating research discoveries just at this point in time. So I want to ask a broader question today. What must be true for AI and deep tech and India to be a creator of those technologies rather than simply being consumer? To have this conversation, I have with me Dr. Shiv Kumar Kalyanaraman. He is the CEO of AMRF, and he has seen it all. He has been in academia, brief stint in startups, technology leadership, and now sitting right at the center of innovation policy of India. So welcome to the show, Dr. Shiv. Great to have you.
Thank you, Prakash. It's lovely to be at you on your show. Look forward to the conversation.
And a piece of trivia for our audience is Dr. Shiv, in 1989, was ranked number 3 in IIT JEE. And it, at that point in time, and still is one of the toughest exams in the world. Congratulations to you for that, even now.
Thank you.
So I want to start, Dr. Shiv, with innovation, right? And I've heard almost all the interviews you have done and recorded, the podcast, some of the conversations you have had. You have seen industry, startups, now at the National Innovation Policy Agenda. And across all of these, where do you believe innovations happen the best?
See, innovation happens ultimately, it's all of intrinsic to all of us. I know India has a lot of humans. We need to convert that into human capital. That's the challenge of India. Just like we have, capital in the form of infrastructure that is deployed as infrastructure, hard infrastructure like our roads, airports, ports, trains, railways, and bullet trains, and so on. Similarly, and we look at our digital infrastructure, we have the India Stack, Aadhaar, UPI, and bank accounts, and so on and so forth. So now that has completely transformed our lives. Similarly, the next major part is human infrastructure and so on. So innovation is what dimension of human infrastructure, which is uniquely human, which is our ability to be creative and so on. And if you look at countries that go past in the growth journey, they go from being a lower country to ultimately past the middle income, and there's a middle income trap, and you want to go beyond that. So if you really need to cross that middle income trap, you have to become a technology-led economy in many parts where some of the Western economies are. So, and that's a long road. So you can't start after 15 years, so you have to start now. To get there, right? So I think innovation is a journey, and also we need to make the environment suited for innovation. We need all the actors of research and innovation to work there. So it's really an ecosystem transformation agenda that we have. And what ANRF as an institution is to be a catalyst in this transformation.
Yeah. And you have talked about catalyzing the ecosystem in some of your past conversations as well. And I wanted to set a backdrop for it in terms of innovation, like you talked about. I agree with it. And why is it that innovation has become so important for national competitiveness? Is it any different from how it was perceived probably 5 or 10 years back, you think?
The innovation has always been important in the long arc of economic growth. Right? So many countries, if you look at the Asian countries that have grown, and of course China and so on, right? It starts off at a different place where the quantity and quality of innovation might be smaller. But then as they grow, proportion of innovation in their economies grows. So that's one general thing. So as you want to grow to becoming a Viksit Bharat, is one of the key areas. So that's one. Now also it is being amplified with a lot of the geopolitical changes that are happening and issues like technology sovereignty and so on. That is just adding another dimension. But I would view that as the only dimension that drives us. I think innovation is intrinsically important as a driver of productivity growth. Productivity growth is the long-term driver of a country's long-term. Now, from a security standpoint and technology sovereignty standpoint, in critical areas, you want to ensure that you're not suddenly cut off from critical technologies and so on and so forth. So you need to have more resilience and ability to withstand shocks that happens. Right? So I think, therefore, and India is also a very large country, uncompared with, say, a smaller country like even the Asian Tigers or Singapore, etc. Around smaller countries, like a comparable will be a country like China or the United States and or the entire Europe or the entire Latin America as a landmass and so on. So I think that's the right kind of comparable. But if you just look at India as a population, we are sixth of the entire world. So it allows a lot of diversity in the country. Two things are completely opposite could still be true in India. But innovation is an important driver of long-term economic growth, and it's going to be one of the pillars of it.
Right. And you think AI has changed the dynamic in terms of the innovation and national competitiveness has become even more important now? Or like you said, it is pretty much remained one of the important pillars to growth or productivity as well as for country?
Yeah, I've worked in AI for the last 20 years in various applied AI and so on. And, it is a technology that is truly transformational and game-changing. But I think it's important not to overstate some of the issues with AI. It is not like either we are AI done or dusted. And, we are a very, very large country. So, yes, we have to adopt AI. We have to drive the diffusion of AI in various parts. Yes, we also have to develop, our sovereign capabilities, be part of some of the key sovereign models and other sorts of things. And in other words, we both need to create technology as well as diffuse technology. As a large country, we need to have abilities of both. And AI is one of big platform technologies today. We need to consider that in its full seriousness. Now, I was part of the internet revolution and part of the mobile revolution in my professional journey. All of these were super important. But, it is not the only thing as it's been out.
Yeah, true. And from a talent point of view, India has a tremendous amount of talent. Researchers, engineers, entrepreneurs, all of that. But we yet don't have world-beating or what you call frontier technology, which is globally relevant at this point in time. What do you believe is the gap as we see it today?
See, for you to develop frontier technology, typically you need a full ecosystem where you have markets for those technologies locally as well. Right? In addition to the innovators, so it's the supply side. So, we certainly have the ability to develop, like Sarvam AI has shown that we can develop a world-class, world-beating model and so on. our cost of capital is tends to be higher, so we can't play the same capital game as everybody else is playing. And you know, and that bubble will burst in due course. And we've seen previous bubbles burst. Every bubble, whether it's a railway bubble or the tulip bubble or the internet bubble, all of them have burst. We know this AI bubble is also going to burst. We just know when. So you know, you are being restrained is actually a virtue in that as well. So, but at the same time, we're not being restrained is not a sign of weakness. You know exactly that. So it's a combination of we have to drive and be smarter about the way we do it. Right? Just like in our economic choices, we tend to be more paisa vasool and you know, frugal and in our so we are, you know, I think India will emphasize efficiency, efficient, affordable, and but at the same time, trustworthy and useful and impactful. So I think being efficient and high quality are not two necessarily conflicting objectives. And also being at the frontier versus frontier minus one or close to frontier minus delta is not as life or death as it's made out to be. And, you know, since I worked with the AI space for a long time, I can say with conviction that, you know, that you can certainly adopt and also the open source models and so on just a few months away from the absolutely frontier models. And we have to be in the game, but we can be 10 times more efficient, right? Why would, in a capital constrained economy, what is a B2B investment? You mean our endowment of capital and how we achieve the approach? I think this is the balancing act that we need to do. Now, coming back to the broader question, right? So clearly, we have a lot of human talent, and now that talent is getting upskilled. And now, you know, we've come over 30 years in the IT revolution and then followed by the e-commerce and other revolutions. And now we are entering the deep tech revolution and so on and so forth, right? So I think, you know, India will evolve, okay? How, yes, could it evolve faster? We all love for that. But that will happen. But also it is important for the local market to start, you know, adopting e-commerce. So, so if you go to Silicon Valley or other parts like the Boston area and so on, so there is both the producers and consumers of that technology right there. So I think we have to see where are we, the consumers of AI technology, and where can those AI solutions start happening. So then those would be benefits for us to take and go further. At the same time, we can look at our strengths, right? We have a lot of renewable energy available. We have a lot of data that is generated. So we have to look at what is the unique combination of characteristics that we bring in. We have a lot of diversity in languages and linguistics. So I think it is far more important to step away from the brink of, you know, I would say, you know, just the top level argument and come down one more level and see what are the unique capabilities and so on we have, and where can we create a local market, and then that drives the unique type of advantage, and then we got to get better at our marketing game as well.
Yeah, fair point. And yeah, it is so easy for us to say, in the current environment that you have to invest in the best model and the most expensive infrastructure to be able to compete, which may not always be the case, right? And it seems to me you are thinking through in terms of first principles and what is required for innovation. Doesn't necessarily need to be that. It can be 3 months behind on open source and still be really competitive and efficient.
Yeah, look, I think it is very clear that there is a debate going on and that scaling laws are important, and scaling laws is a game and a very capital intensive race, which only a few people are there and participate. And there is a gentle drive and say, hey, you ought to be one of them or you're out of the game and so on. That is one perspective. I can understand that perspective. The other perspective is to say, how can you be smarter and have your me and so on in case you're shut out from any other model and so on, and have the ability to quickly diversify. It is not like a technology we are completely locked out of, and we have to make sure that we don't get locked out of stream as, and suddenly our Indian talent, whether locally or the diaspora and so on, have done very well. It is not like we don't know how to do this. It's not like rocket science and so on and so forth. So it is just a combination of the ability to build models. We have shown that, you know, Sarvam has shown that with, you know, a whole bunch of young engineers, they are able to build a world-class model. We don't know how to do it. So I think it's important to understand that it can be done. yes, there may be some degree of capital investment that is needed, and over time that will go. But you know, there is nothing wrong in balancing efficiency at appropriate levels of frugality, while you know, aiming for the right goals. That is, balances both the cost of capital that we are exposed to and the objectives we want.
Yeah, and one follow-on question in my mind, Dr. Shiv, is there is this relentless race on a new technology. Now it is AI, future could be something else, right? Where most times people are talking about going faster, the country needs to go faster, like you said, right? Most people want to go faster, but research and breakthrough innovation does not happen in a jiffy. It takes time. So in your position, how do you balance the need for speed and the need for having the principles in place and the systems in place so that the innovation can take shape over a period of time, so that you manage or engage different stakeholders in a way that drives the best agenda for the country?
See, can ANRF, we are an institution that supports both the broad base of science and technology in India, so which includes all the way from physics, quantum, and all of these other areas, and chemistry or biology and all these other areas, and engineering sciences on an AI is one of the huge focus areas nowadays. But all these areas matter. So, and of course, there is deep science that matters, and then deep science gets converted to deep tech. Yes, with AI, the rate at which you can generate new deep science or convert deep science to deep tech, that game is changing. Therefore, we have a program called AI for Science and Engineering, where we like our folks to adopt that, become the developers and generators of new AI for science and engineering models, and accelerate the pace at which both deep science is generated, knowledge is generated, as well as deep tech is generated. So I think that is the frame that we look at. It is, all of these areas are important. So AI technology is one part of the puzzle. There is an entire base of science and engineering that and innovation and research that needs to be supported, and they have different timescales. Right? That timescale itself is shrinking, and smart about adoption of new tools rather than being a Luddite and not adopting new tools. I think we can go a long way. And the second part is that we'd like to see a lot more collaboration for impact, collaboration of interdisciplinary researchers, collaboration of teams that come together as opposed to individual researchers doing things. Collaboration of academia and industry, collaboration of labs and academia, etc. So we are putting in incentives to drive such collaborations across the board. And at the same time, we have a large fund that is focused only on the private sector, driving a lot more, industry investment into our areas.
Yeah, yeah. And to that end, there is a point I wanted to talk about on large corporates and private sector investment in R&D. It's a known fact that from a country point of view, the private sector investment in India is lower than even the government investment in R&D. How do you believe collaboration can fix that gap? And maybe private sector invests far more, as they should, as compared to the government, towards R&D and causes of breakthrough innovation.
See, I think it's important when you think of what private sector invests in R&D and who are these private sector folks. So let's say Google invests in a lot of R&D and they have produced a Nobel laureate recently. Or earlier, IBM used to invest in R&D in across Europe and US and they produce Nobel laureates and so on. So that's one view of what private sector R&D means. Another is very applied R&D, like when Lockheed Martin uses defense contracts and then produces a next generation, sort of airplane of sorts, right? And then, now Elon Musk is supported by C, and then that drives, new rockets and reusable rockets and so on. Similarly, there could be, new vaccine development and other sorts of development. So there's a large range of what it means for private sector to invest. Now, if you look at the nature of the mix of private sector in India, it is, India is a lot more of a services-led economy at the moment. So you have, entities that are more from that background. And they do have a lot of return on capital. In other words, they are throwing off a lot of free cash flow. They have return on capital. They invest carefully and so on. Now, if they are investing carefully, why are they not investing in R&D? right? So they are not seeing the returns in R&D or returns to R&D in the context in which they are operating. That's the mindset of us. So, but it also, if you look at it from sort of the growth of these entities, companies move from, focusing on being a trading company towards a company that is vertically integrated or manages value chains, and then a company that is tech-enabled, like e-commerce companies that is, Blinkit or others who deliver things to you or Amazon and Flipkart and so on. And then ultimately to, of course, the IT companies that export. Now we have a whole bunch of global capability centers. And, then we have companies like Kodu, 3D printed rockets and so on. So, in other words, there's a journey from being a pure trading company, which is buy and sell on one end of the spectrum. And on the other side, it's a tech-enabled and ultimately a tech company. So the more and more we see the mix of companies where technology, they define themselves as a technology company. They're using more R&D investment. So in some sectors, like a pharma sector does invest a lot in R&D, sector does invest a lot in R&D, and they invest more. Yes, of course, they can invest more. There can be a step change in relative R&D they can do and so on. And there are certain factors outside just the usual challenges that they do. And, we are addressing a set of those challenges, including financing and so on, which is some of the elements of what we do. So I think where we have come from, okay, is not the same as where we are going to go.
Right.
Okay. So while we've had some of these challenges in the past where we've had more trading-oriented companies, doesn't mean that the future is going to be more of these trading-oriented companies. You will see a change. Either the older stalwarts adapt and either go after the new opportunities and become a lot more tech-enabled or become technology companies themselves, or new technology companies will emerge that we will encourage. So that you'll have, the creative destruction forces happening, and then that will drive new export market. So I think the way to think about it is also this technology, science, research, innovation driven is a lot more. The global markets are far bigger than our local markets. So India is also coming simultaneously one of the largest economies in the world, and also it is only about $2,800 per capita. Right, so the amount of discretionary spend, the amount that drives pure innovation and so on, right? So we therefore look at affordable innovation and so on, where we are in the spectrum. But if you look at the global markets, that's much more wider and so on. So using India as the R&D hub for the world, or India as the R&D partner for the world, I think is a better thing because the markets are global.
Yeah.
And now if you're able to address those global markets. Take a country like Israel, which was a small country. It's not having a large market itself, but it addressed the global market. It became a technology powerhouse in itself. Similarly, we have a much larger endowment of people, skills, and talent, and so on. So as our entrepreneurs and our universities and so on look at and have a much more global outcome, then the world is our oyster in terms of becoming more. So we will see the birthing of a lot more technology come. So we have to grow out from where we are, then look at the opportunities as we go forward. These are the few thoughts I have.
That's great set of points there, Dr. Shiv. The one part I want to ask you more about, and you have mentioned in some of the past conversation, is the GCC's footprint that exists here and the R&D footprint of GCC's in India can be a great opportunity for India to collaborate with so that innovation fuels the innovation in the rest of the country. So maybe you could touch on it a bit more.
See, I'll give you a personal anecdote. When I moved back from the US to India, I joined IBM Research Labs here. Okay, it was a research labs of IBM, which was established here a few years before I joined. Similarly, there was Microsoft Research, and then there was GE Research and so on. So as I worked for those other companies, I worked closely with the R&D entities of that, even if I found directly in the R&D rules. So I think GCCs or any foreign entity and so on, right? Because they are already technology company. IBM is a technology company. Microsoft is a technology company. GE is a technology-led company or technology company in the industrial area. So they already do R&D. So, we'd like India to be an R&D partner for the world. And as part of that, we can attract a lot more diaspora, and these could be landing zones for them. And just like I came out of these companies and I'm now here in government. And if you look at many of the entrepreneurs who started Flipkart and so on, they were originally working in Amazon and they went out. You should look at these as places where they become the crucibles for folks both to land as well as provide opportunities, and they learn about the best technology, and then ultimately human capital develops, and that human capital is mobile, so they can go start new companies. And we want to make the environment exciting, the financing available, so that more and more folks make that choice. So I think it's not an either or. India must be the R&D capital, R&D partner for the world. We be an inviting place for GCC, because that itself is a direct export market for us. And we welcome global companies to set up shop here, as well as increase the move from just being pure IT players to being full-fledged business services and other things, including R&D, being done out of India. And then, that will lead to spillovers naturally. So it's not the only factor, but I think it's a very important factor. Given the growth of GCC, I think it's a no-brainer that we should be a lot more inviting of more R&D. And we need a lot more labs like IBM Research and others to come to India. And I would personally welcome through your forum and others to ask all the great companies to say, why are they not setting up R&D here? Come and talk to me. They have issues.
Yeah, fair point. Great, great set of thoughts there, Dr. Sher. And the other element of this conversation was diffusion, technology diffusion. And you have mentioned in your conversations also is there is innovation and there is technology diffusion. And technology diffusion is what creates more impact. And you also talked about in one of the conversations, every Einstein cannot become Elon Musk. Nor should we expect the person to be. So how do you look at technology diffusion? There have been conversations like Aadhaar in the country, which is a great story of diffusion. How do you make sure that conditions exist for technology, frontier technologies, to diffuse faster in the country?
See, I think I think there's two important differences I'd like to make and mention. It is both important for India to create technology, through fundamental research and early stage technology development, and diffuse technology. And the way technology diffuses is through realizations in as products and services that actually solve real world problems. So that is the path of diffusion. And of course, they need to be marketed. They need to go and solve India's problems at scale. That's the vision of the Honorable Prime Minister as well. Solve India's problems, and as part of that, become global leaders and so on. So technology diffusion is therefore, or what we call translation in some way, translation in further the onward diffusion, is a critical part, because otherwise you will not realize the economic benefit. And technology, the other difference I'd like to make is that technology or even science, as a precursor technology, deep science, deep tech and so on, is only an enabler. Technology is always an enabler. Technology has to be converted to products and services, which then are the vehicles of diffusion. So I think it's very important that that transition from technology to product has to happen, and product to market fit has to happen. Product is does not have value unless it has a market fit. And that could be a long journey as well in the world of food. So I think the way is that I look at this as a continuum of our multiple stages. And it's like in our impact white paper, we said that it's like a multi-baton race. Right? So it's like when you're doing these 400 meter batons, the parts, you're still trying to run at speed, but you're passing the baton and so on. So yes, it is a rare individual who's also an Einstein, but who also becomes an Elon Musk, and he's able to do that. And Elon Musk, of course, fancies himself as being an Einstein as well, but leaving that aside. But you think of Elon Musk as the entrepreneurs and Einsteins as the, if you look at Indian examples, you have the likes of Sini Raman, and you have the Narayan Murthys, or the younger generation of entrepreneurs who are there, like the Mukesh Bansals and others, right, who are there today. So so they bring a very different perspective. And it is not that the skill set in the specialization that is necessary. We don't want every scientist to suddenly become an entrepreneur. I think sometimes that is a mistaken thought. In practical reality, only about 5 to 10% of scientists choose to become entrepreneurs.
Agreed.
And so, but we do want to have that conversation, you know, the place where ideas diffuse, and also through the world of social media and rich media and now AI generated content, all of that, those linkages to happen, so that that baton race can flow through. Right now, given the world we are in today, we are not in the world of Einstein. Like, he was a patent clerk, he wrote a paper, somebody read the paper, and suddenly he became world famous. It's amazing that in those were times of the war and other sorts of things, and where that was the power of his ideas that cut through the noise. And but today we are in a world where if you are a researcher with a great idea, you happen to have a primary publication or a paper, and you do great science, it is you have to talk about your great science. You can write a, just like we have a conversation on this call. In a Zoom call, you can have a Zoom call with yourself, make a presentation, and then record it, put it on YouTube. But that will drive dissemination. And similarly, now AI can take your primary content, create secondary content like podcasts and in multiple languages. This also drives diffusion. You can write it, it can create a poster, it can create a business brief that communicates all things. So I think the rate at which ideas can diffuse. And now you can have AI agents which go out and look for, you know, interesting opportunities and then find and discover talent. And we are going to be creating, as another of many such things that can enable that diffusion. So we are looking at what are the catalytic things that we can do to help accelerate it. So I think for us, we want to support the milieu and environment in which great science, great technology happens. Point number one, right? And of course, we have to provide more resources. But also beyond just the raw resources, we'd like to drive the orientation of collaboration for impact, greater productivity, and aiming bigger, right? So you, I think that is one of the things we can do. Second is, then once you've done great work, how do you diffuse that? How can we be the cheerleaders? How can we use all the modern tools like AI? So I think these are the two things that we are trying to do. And ultimately, if we do our act together, there'll be multiple tools and techniques, but we can have both faster diffusion and the greater generation. So then, there's a large country, and once we have all these pieces available, you know, 1,000 flowers will bloom, and that will lead to economic growth.
Fantastic. Very well said, Dr. Shiv. Dr. Shiv, the one point I wanted to ask you, it's the book I recently downloaded. It's called The Idea Factory, and it talks about Bell Labs and how it created an environment which ended up winning, having a lot more Nobel laureates and innovations that we still use, right? These kind of innovations are really long-term. And great examples, which you have also mentioned in the past conversations, is DARPA, National Science Foundation, right? And ANRF sits in that kind of situation. So how do you look at long-term? And how could we catalyze the whole country towards innovating faster?
See, I think fundamentally, we have to think of creating an environment where researchers and innovators thrive. So for too long, our research and innovators have been challenged with very limited resources and, start-stop funding, a lot of other challenges. Of course, we want the entire environment to be competitive and not lazy and be much more vibrant. So we have to move, have a step change towards a lot more vibrant ecosystem, a lot more collaborative ecosystem. An ecosystem that then throws off lots of innovations, and then there is the many career pathways available. And then as a government, as a capitalist, continues supporting this in a consistent and a long-term way. So I think that's the journey we are on. We've just begun, and I keep saying picture abhi baki hai, and we have a long way to go. But ultimately, that ecosystem transformation, the orientation towards, I want to do work that has impact. I want to do great things. I want to do great science. I want to do great translation. I want to do great applied work. And don't settle for less. And, why am I doing it? What is your time is most valuable? What are you doing? These are the kinds of questions. And at the same time, we want to have enabling environments that facilitate and continue the journey of lowering the frictions. I do understand that there are some challenges, but we will, be relentless in both financing as well as reducing the frictions and enabling an ecosystem to thrive so that we welcome back a lot more of our diaspora back and innovate out of India or research out of India for the world.
Yeah, very much required, Dr. Shiv. So on that note, and you said picture abhi baki hai, so I want to jump to a bunch of rapid-fire questions just for fun.
Sure.
So to start with, if AI were a PhD student, what's the first thing you would fail it for?
So, yeah, I'm failed for coming up, jumping to conclusions too soon, and coming up with some things and being too overconfident.
Great points. One thing industry gets wrong about academia.
Yeah, I think everybody expects others to be like them. Industry should not expect academia to be like industry. Similarly, academia should not expect industry to be like them. You can be different, but then you can get along with each other. So then the only key question is, what do you do to get along with each other? What makes sense together? So I think the first understanding of the differences and acknowledgement of the differences, and then asking, what can you do that makes sense for me? And somehow getting that common vocabulary and language, that's where the challenge.
Fair point. One word you would ban from every innovation conference tomorrow.
That's a good one. I don't have anything immediately to answer there. Okay, so.
Okay. What's the one thing about innovation in India that everyone believes but you think is wrong?
Yeah, everyone believes that innovation is something that you get a quick buck on or it's a quick return on. Innovation actually is a very diligent, meticulous process of discovery. And curiosity-driven enterprise is very deeply personal and quite diverse. So I think that culture and enabling environments are very hard to create, and that's the environment in which innovators thrive. So I think it's far more important to focus on the environment you create in addition to what you pay those innovators and how you respond.
Very well said. Will AI create more Nobel Prize winners or more PowerPoint slides?
Today it's creating a lot more PowerPoint slides, but it's at cusp of, I would say, enabling more Nobel Prize winners. As you saw, there were a couple of Nobel Prize winners who used AI, but it's ultimately the humans who will win Nobel Prize and not the AI, at least for the foreseeable future.
Agree. Last question, what's harder, discovering something new or convincing people it matters?
Well, I think both are hard. I think it's at different phases. So when you're in a completely different and you're thinking different in a very deep and difficult area, discovering is very hard, especially when you're tied for constraints or resources. And then once you've come up with this and you have the brilliant idea but nobody understands it, that convincing and diffusing that is also hard. So I think it's at different phases these are hard. But I guess that to some extent, AI can help you more in storytelling in the future. So maybe that's one thing it can be good at.
Yeah, true. So that brings us to the end of Rapid Fire. And I want to get back to the conversation where we left off and bring AI into the mix. You touched on AI and the power of AI in innovation. How does it change the equation, you think, for the countries? Does it make it go faster and hence much more important to have a kind of AI influence the agenda for innovation or any other way you look at it?
See, ultimately, you have to understand that economic growth is driven by productivity. And productivity is what all of us do in our daily lives. And then AI, like any other technology, is an enabler. It is just that it's a much more richer and more, I would say, flexible enabler. And it touches many, many areas. It can morph into, whatever you want it to be. So on. So that's the power and the reason why everybody's so excited about it. So, but I think it's very important to not make it a crutch. It's like you can make a calculator a crutch, and or you can look at it as a cat case. So I think we always emphasize use technology as an enabler, but humans have the judgment, and putting things together towards the economic value that it needs to bring. So I think that would be the balance.
And to that end, that brings me to the question I started the episode with on what must be true for India to be a meaningful contributor to AI and deep tech ecosystem across the world rather than just being a consumer?
See, I think we have a lot more builders. Okay, we need to increase the intensity of builders, and we need to be able to provide the patient capital for them to build. Okay, so that's one of the things that ENRF and through our RDI scheme, and we will see a lot more announcements on that going forward, is seeking to enable. So that, in along with other supportive policies, the ability of more access to compute for the innovators and researchers, that's the policy that MIT is pursuing. And this will be done more at a greater scale. And then there has to be more of a demand side environment where there is being more adopted. So I think you'll see a combination of both demand side forces and supply side forces, and creating a better environment and sort of easing the what we call the binding constraints in the space. So, I'm quite confident that there will always be a lot more spotlight on the what you look at very, very high end of AI that is super capital intensive and so on. But I think you would do more better to look at and not underestimate the changes that are happening in the more efficient forms of AI, things that is, where it's helping in more diversity and ultimately driving the, impact of it in various systems. So I think, suppose you are able to change the entire justice system, or you are able to, reduce regulation and so on, this actually reduces a lot of binding constraints in the economy to help drive the growth of the economy. Or if, we adopt all our scientists and engineers adopt AI in their journeys, the rate at which we do science and engineering in this thing. So I think on one hand, we should not underestimate the use of AI. At the same time, we can use smaller and mid-size and, even medium-sized, large models. But, in addition to, playing appropriately with the frontier models that are out there. So we will be a creator of multiple stages. And there'll be many, many more laps to go before the game is considered over and so on. So I think it's very important that, we have a much more of a balanced perspective. And yes, we will be doing a lot more things. Just because we are not in a limelight doesn't mean we don't know what we are doing. And yes, we'll also invest more. And there'll be a lot more in the country. But ultimately, what matters to us is the broad-based growth of the country. And, sort of the doomsday thing that we're being locked out and so on. Just look around you. We aren't being locked out of anything.
Yeah, true. And as you assess that, and you also mentioned rightly so that innovation is a very long-term game. Institutions exist for decades before they start showing meaningful impact, right? The question I have is, how do you measure that? There is one way of research papers and patents coming through from the ecosystem, but that's not the only method. So as you chart this long-term trajectory, and ANRF is right at the center of innovation agenda for the country, how do you measure progress short-term so that you have milestones and you have a longer-term vision towards where we are getting to as a country?
Yeah, that's an excellent question. I think we recently put out a white paper on the question, what is impact? So this is something that, we are telling that ANRF is going to be an impact-driven organization. And the natural question that arises, what is impact? So we have attempted to put an answer out. In brief, we think of impact as a multidimensional thing, impact in a theoretical or a basic science theory, impact station. We have to understand it and measure it differently. Impact is more than publishing papers. Publishing papers is a reporting of the science. What matters is doing great science and then ensuring that the great science or deep science becomes deep technology. It drives the decision. So I think it's important to look at, do great science, come up with great knowledge, okay? And then also be a factor in that diffusion of that, so that it has ultimately an impact on science or society, right? Science, technology, economic growth, society. That's the sort of milieu of things where now you don't have to be the agent that goes all the way to have that impact. In other words, an Einstein doesn't have to become an Elon Musk. Yeah. But you'll have to play your part and especially use all the tools and techniques available. And we will ask you, what have you done to increase the probability of downstream diffusion and adoption? So I think that's the frame we are asking. And also, the more researchers think of what is the impact of their work, and you assume you compound interest on this over and over again, you will choose problems which are have impact. Everybody will make different choices. Some might want to do great science. Some might want to do use-inspired or society-inspired research. No problem. We need all of that. So, but we would like everybody to take a step change towards doing impact-driven science, impact-driven innovation, and also be more bolder. You know, if I have the choice between doing an incremental piece of work and doing a bolder piece of work, we would like to encourage you to take those bigger risks and potential bigger upsides. So, your probability of failure might be high. Failure is just one of two outcomes, and you just move on, you go to... So I think that's the kind of change of pattern that we are trying to engineer through the PACT framework and so on. So that's one set of metrics. But then if you step up at a macroeconomic level, you'd like to see a growth in the percentage of GDP that is focused on research and development. That is one of the, you think of as input measures. But then more, we'd also like to change up the mix of that investment from being just more government-driven to more private sector or non-government-driven as well. So that is the pattern that exists in most other societies which are more technology-led. So that's a journey from where we are to where we need to be. So all of these are important, and that will happen, but the return on capital or the return on that investment is also high. So we are simultaneously trying to change up the engine so that it's not an ambassador car engine and it becomes more like a Jaguar or Tesla engine or whatever, right? So then, so it can go much faster and it's much more efficient. If you're more efficient, you will attract more capital. So ultimately the greater levels of investment as a metric, it presumes that your return on investment is higher. So as we create the conditions for better return on capital, there will be more investment and we will be driving more.
Well said. And as you have embarked on that journey, the founders, researchers, and builders in the country, how do you believe they should engage with ANRF, and what is the kind of value they can derive from it?
Yeah, that's an excellent question, and I'm happy you asked that. I have written a very long article on LinkedIn, which I would encourage your readers to look at. I would also encourage them to follow any of our social media. We exist on ANRF, is there on all the social media. Please follow us because that will keep you part of the journey. So the important thing is we have also, as part of the normal article, I've written out how each stakeholder can engage with us. Right. So if you're a student or a professor and so on, you can participate in many of our grant programs and compete for them. If you are in research labs, similarly, you can do. If you're in the not-for-profit sectors, you can apply for many of our programs and so on. Right? And then if you go beyond that, if you're a company or if you're a startup and so on, we have an entire program called RDI, which is much larger. And we are rolling that out right now. Money will be going out to one of our fund managers, and you will see many more being announced. So that will create an entire asset class. So there'll be a lot more funding and financing available in the form of patient capital for these things. And there'll be a lot more of these translational investments that we'll be making. So we are, as a funding body and using our funding as a catalyst, we'll be creating many of these. We are also creating tools that enable diffusion that allow you to take the pick it up and be part of a larger ecosystem. You think of it as a diffusion ecosystem, diffusion platform to get your word out of what you're doing so that that can again bring in inbound queries and your collaboration and so on. So these are, I would say, two broad things we're doing. Of course, we'll be doing many more things to drive and sing. And if you are industry, if you are philanthropy, if you're CSR, or if you're a diaspora, we have other ways in which you can engage. You can partner with the ANRF at the large scale into various programs. We have partnerships with the foundations like the Gates Foundation, Madhvani Foundation, and others. We have partnered with Google, NVIDIA, and Qualcomm. So we'll be announcing many more partnerships going forward. You'll see us make announcements with many of the Indian companies or philanthropy and other and so on. And there are also going to be many other changes that will make it easier to participate. For example, we are working with SEBI to potentially list some of our programs as part of the social stock exchange. So just like you have your DMAT account and so on, you can actually donate 1,000 rupees through ANRF programs and so on in the future through some of these institutions. So we make it easy to engage whether you would like to on the give side or contribute side or get side, right? So there'll be many ways in which you can engage. And ultimately, that engagement itself is very important because that brings our community together because the Honorable Prime Minister believes that it's in all of government and all of society coming together to create this. So this is the theory of how we plan to do. And of course, the details will emerge as we move through this.
Wow. I didn't know there are lots of creative activities and initiatives that you have thought through. Kudos and wishing you and team the very best in that.
Thank you very much. It is a credit to our extended team that, and they are very, very hardworking and focused in getting things going. And as I always leave and sign off, picture abhi baki hai. What you've seen is just a trailer.
Yeah. So I have a final question. We are coming close to the end of the show, Dr. Shiv. And it's the same for all the guests. That India's foray in AI and deep tech is not only about domestic growth. Yes, it can solve some of the domestic growth challenges, but it's not only about that. It's our place in the global vantage point of technology and society and ecosystems. So fast forward 10, 15 years, where do you believe India's place in the global ecosystem will be? And what are the two or three things that need to happen for it to make or convert itself into a reality?
See, I think just like you saw the rise of Japan and you saw the rise of China and, you know, as a whole, the Asian tigers and others, right? You will see the rise of India as a research and innovation powerhouse. And ANRF is set up as a faculty organization to make that happen. So our mission statement is to help catalyze the rise of India as a research and innovation powerhouse. And that is a pillar of Viksit Bharat. So now, you know, just like you saw what was China like in 2005 and where it is today, and I think, you know, you have to think in similar terms of where, you know, India will be there in 10, 15 years, right? So so what would they do? They got their ecosystem act together. They got their investment act together. They got their entrepreneurs together. And of course, the paths and the details of how they do it might be different versus how we do it in a much more of a democratic society. With the different constraints that we have. That might be different, but the end goal of, you know, and or maybe the mixes of where we end up will be different in terms of what specific areas and how much is in manufacturing services or, you know, the blends of the two and so on. But, you know, that would give you a good idea of where we'd like to be. We'd like India to be a world leader in the creation and, I know, and diffusion. India will also be a large enough market and continuing to grow at that time. So it will not only be a vibrant place to do R&D, but also a large enough market where you'll see a lot more technology companies emerge as opposed to technology enabled companies or just sort of value chain or other types of companies. So you'll see all of these happening and also India, you know, and this becoming a large export sector. Because, you know, the markets, as I mentioned, are all global. We'll see India being the R&D partner for the world. We'll see a lot more GCCs having labs. We'll see a lot more non-governmental institutions having, you know, research, you know, sort of institutions, whether it's like the Fraunhofer Institution or the IMEC or, you know, or like the Turing Institute or you know, Max Planck or, all the like SRI and Alania Institute and so on and so forth. So we'll see many of these sorts of entities emerge. So I think whether it's the institutes, our institutes will go towards the top of the world and so on. Yeah, it's a journey ahead. It's not something they take a single step and get there. And it's also a transformation of that ecosystem. And you see a lot more, just not just unicorns, but megacons. You know, ultimately, trillion-dollar companies coming out of India, addressing the world. So I think these are all the things that needs to happen and all aspects of it, whether the human factor or the enabling environments or the markets and so on, everything will be having to come together.
Wonderful. And a lot of what you said has never happened in India before. So once again, kudos to you and team for being part of such an interesting and inspiring journey and wish you the best for it.
And we also need a lot more Nobel Prize winners from India.
True. Absolutely.
Thank you so much for having me on your show and the response.
Thank you, Dr. Shiv. Is there anything else that you wanted to bring up before we close?
No, thank you. And it is very important to have these conversations so that the message goes out. And it is important to have, an optimistic direction, but at the same time, be realistic. And at the same time, we, take away constraints one by one and get going. And it's always, interesting to say, hey, why don't you invest a lot more immediately? Yeah. So, but I think the investment takes to grow as a function of time, as the absorptive capacity also grows. So we think of it as developing the capacity to absorb the investment as much as we think of raw investment deals. So I think it's important to have that frame as you think of the future. That'll be a far more sustainable journey.
Yeah. Be ambitious, but be also pragmatic.
Yes. That's a great idea. Thank you so much. Have a nice day.
Thank you. You too, Dr. Shiv. For our audience, thank you for being on Giant Chips. If you like an episode, please recommend it to your friends and family as it helps us get the word out. You can listen or watch on YouTube, Apple Podcasts, and Spotify. And please give us feedback as it helps us get better. With that, see you next time.